Mine, I would ask, call the meeting to order. I'd ask them to call the board members.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Booth.
Here.
All counted for.
Would you continue with staff and public, please?
As I point to you, please state your name and organization. We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Carson Roger, Ada.
Jim Hempstead, Ada.
Gene Terrio, Ada.
Mark Harger, Ada.
Dan Britton, Ednick.
Amy Nelson, Isaac.
Justin Yonder, Charlton, Nick.
Bruce Chambers, 17, Ada.
Phil Phelan, Ada.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Sue Wolf, Northern Bank.
Bill Lawson, Holiday Inn Express.
Una Elkers, Ada. Ben, Ada.
Terry Judea, Department of Law.
Brenda Appleby, Ada.
Gordy Waitman, Child and Associate.
Tom Anderson, Ada.
Mike Hesse, Ada.
Frank Lamb, Ada.
Frank Kevin, Ada. Do we have any public on the phone? Public on the phone?
Yep. Yes, Eric Pierce, Irving.
Okay, any other public?
Dylan Stewart, Chiragassee. Sorry. Dylan Stewart, Chiragassee Utility.
Any other public? Sounds like off.
Thank you, Greg. Item number four on our agenda is agenda approval. For you, I'll make a motion. Thank you. The deletion addition changes.
Chair, I request that we table item 7D until the August 10th order, which is the agenda and policy discussion.
Any objections to that? All right, so how about we approve it as amended? Thank you. Next on our agenda is item number 5, public comment. Remind everybody to please clearly state your name and affiliation. And also remind you that please limit your comment to 3 minutes. With that being said, I will start with anybody in the conference room. If anybody in the conference room, please make a public comment. Seeing none, I will then go online. Is there anybody online who wishes to make a public comment?
Yes.
Go ahead. State your name. Affiliation, please.
Hi. Good afternoon. This is Eric Pearson Fairbanks. I'd like to speak with you about the Interior Energy Project. You have two items on your agenda today that deal with that issue. First, I want you to think about the fact that people at Fairbanks are paying attention to this effort, the Interior Energy Project. We've been trying to give the parties involved some space to allow them to come up with a solution. My first request of the ADA board is that you deal with the Interior Gas Utility in good faith. My second request is that you pull out the Governor's Administrative Order 272 from January of 2015 as you go into executive session. And after reading it, ask if you're following the Governor's order. The second paragraph from the end of the order reads, I am also directing the highest levels of my staff, including the Commissioners of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Department of Revenue, in their role as ADA board members, to keep the focus on an interior energy development project on lowering energy costs for consumers and improving air quality for interior residents. Please ask yourselves, are these two objectives being accomplished? Cost of energy today on an MMBTU basis is the cheapest fuel right now is $13.91. Firewood delivered is $12.50. Wood pellets are $16. FNG residential prices will, if you raise those rates, will be about $21. ITU gas estimated to be in the mid to upper teens, and that's before the amortized cost of conversion, which will push those costs well over $20 for consumers. I'd like you to also consider the real value of the FNG Pentex asset, net earnings in their budget. It's in your agenda today after EBITDA, that if you do an earnings-based valuation on this company, it's maybe a $5 to $10 million asset. That you pay too much for this asset, then want to put that mistake on the ITU is inconsistent with 272, the Administrative Board of the Governors asked you to follow. And the answer is, So the question is why? If you don't have the consumer conversions and the ability to clean up the air, those two are inextricably linked to price. And consumer price is hugely important. You do not now have a price that will work. My final thought is this project cannot go forward and must not go forward until there's a credible plan whereby this project fixes the air quality problem in Fairbanks. For those of you maybe are not well acquainted with the problem, Fairbanks is a serious non-attainment for PM2.5, mostly due to wood stove pollution. Fairbanks has an estimated 50 to 100 premature deaths per year due to the dangerously unhealthy air quality we have in this community. Those are deaths related to cancer, heart disease, and stroke. And finally, getting homeowners onto non-particulate emitting heating sources is the only way we will fix the air quality in Fairbanks and address that problem. So I'm asking that you need to do a strategic recalculation and figure out how do you make a project that's really going to fix the air quality. And with that, I'll conclude my comments and be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sears. Any questions from the board?
No.
No? All right. Anybody else online wishing to make a public comment? Hearing that, I will close the public comment period. Bring us to item number 6, prior minutes for May 18, 2007, board package. Make a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from the May 18th board meeting.
Second. Discussion? Questions? Solutions? And then we'll approve the minutes as presented. Thank you. Item number 7 is new business. First one up is item A, a loan resolution L17-02. 7C Investments Incorporated. John?
Item 7A, loan resolution number L17-02, regarding the purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to 7C Investments Incorporated. The loan refinances the Liberty Center, a 19,750 square foot multi-tenanted retail building in Anchorage. The dollar amount of ADA's participation is $3,037,500. At this time, I ask Chris Anderson to present.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon. Well, as indicated, our borrower is 7C Investments, Inc. The judge's words on the credit are Bruce and Lisa Chambers. It is a refinance of a retail building. The borrower will benefit by a lower interest rate, 0.98, reducing the final debt service from 2012, extending the repayment term to 25 years. Existing loan has an interest rate of 4.65% and 6 years until it matures. This is one of the reasons for refinance. There is no construction or new school job that would be supported. It is managed by Bruce Chambers, who is the managing member. Bruce is with us here today. He's an experienced real estate broker, specializing in the Anchorage commercial real estate market for over 30 years. The collateral, we will take a state trust on the collateral, which is the Liberty Center, retail center, that is a habit. The collateral package will include an assignment of rent and a UCC filing on the fixtures. The property has 10 rental units and it's 100% lease. Greg Wang appraised the property on an as-is basis. The market value for lease fee interest in the property is $4,950,000. Which makes the loan to value 68%, which is somewhat under our maximum of 75. The property will service debt payments at 1.69 to 1. 7C's Investments currently has no other loans with ADA. However, Bruce and Lisa are guarantors on an existing loan that we have at a balance of $4,131,750. And we have had two paid off loans with them as well. So we have some history with them. All loans have paid interest. There are no current existing environmental issues as noted. However, you will see that the location is classified as an ADEC cleanup complete site because part of the site was previously occupied by Sapporo. But ADEC has issued a no further action letter for the site, which was done in June of 2010. And Sapporo does remain liable for any future environmental remediation should it come up. The strengths that we saw in this credit are the fact that the property is 100% leased with long-term rent. The debt service coverage is 1.69, which is substantially above our minimum of 1.25. The loan to value is 68%. There's a strong outside financial support ability with the guarantors, and they have a positive lending history here for real estate. Perceived weakness might be that the guarantors have substantial real estate equity concentration in their net worth. However, mitigating the concentration is the fact that the properties are income producing with their long history. Offerors also have ample liquid reserves to support the debt service. In regards to portfolio diversification, these are March 30, 2017 numbers. ADA had 21% of its total portfolio secured by retail type of properties, and that would increase to 21.6%. For participated loans within the Anchorage region, 25% of ADA's total portfolio is attributed to retail, and that would increase to 26.1%. With all things included, the staff does recommend approval of this credit. And I would open it up for any questions that you have. As I indicated, Chambers is with us here today, as well as John Dunnable. Did I get it right? With Martin, and so I would welcome your questions.
Questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman.
Brett?
Mr. Chairman, could either Chris or John speak to, and it's not central, but I just want to walk back through, with no construction of permanent jobs supported the fit of this into a strategic mission in the context of jobs.
Yeah, certainly. And then in prior board meetings, there was a discussion around refinancing as a valid purpose for the benefit of the last businesses. And the board ratified that using this program for refinancing loans is a valid use for purpose of ADA.
Thank you. I just want to reestablish that.
Further questions? I have a couple, and I'd actually like to have the representative from both the banks to join us, Chris okay. And Mr. Chambers.
Come on up. Have a seat.
I never like to let an opportunity go by without giving some information and inquiry to the real estate for all of us.
Yeah,
all
of it's like free info.
And you have to answer me, too.
Yeah.
So my first observation is I think it stands out to me as very positive. Northwood Bank is actually doing a 15-year term, crossing the 7 or 8 or 5. That tells me that, you know, their local bank speaks highly of this project. So, you know, we normally see 5 to 7 years they're pulling the money, but this is like a double of that. See, either Mr. Chambers gave them a great deal or the thing that they think highly is clear. That being said, that's just them. So, it's in the business of loaning real estate, in the business of doing real estate. And Chris, we always ask Chris this when these things come up. What's the market doing? Where is it going activity-wise? We'd like to, I think, for the board's benefit, kind of like to get an update from the private industry, what you guys are thinking, what you're seeing.
But I think a relevant point is on the tenant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I bought this corner when I developed Fred Meyers back in 2001 and recognized that the planning, MOA planning, had said there will never be any commercial zoning south or east of this property. So it is the ideal intersection that Cody's going to have it forever. There will never be any competition. The first retail or commercial is going to come off the hill, and the last one will come home. And when we did the Fred Meyers study, we had to do two separate studies on almost 70% of the Alaska lives up around that hill. It's really remarkable. I always thought Trinity had a lot more love to it. But the number of homes that encompass the entire hillside area is really the majority of those. So I run it for a while. Most of those tenants have been there 15 years, I think, average.
Yeah, they have some tenants that have been there since 92, and that your tenants are making money.
And you know, I understand that the problem. Yeah. It is below market, my rental wage. And the problem is, some of them become very close friends in 15 years. And once their kids grow up, go into college. And then I haven't cranked the rent on them because truly, they've been there forever. But as to the overall market, it's soft. You know, I've been now, went through 30 years in Oregon and went through Eugene crash, went through a crash here in 87. And with the number of jobs lost, you know, typically we're looking at somewhere around 30,000 to 40,000 people going out the door. Very pleasantly surprised that we held on. And honestly, I was just trying to build. It's totally depending on the equipment. You know, the fact that there's low interest money is allowing people to sell businesses to thrive. But overall, the office market is a mess. Class A office is gone. Class B, of course, is getting sucked high and the rates come down. The successful is retail. South Anchorage continues to be newer retail. We're building a new strip center with Steve Adams Subway. And we've already got several tenants for it. So high-end retail, the population is looking for that kind of stuff. They want to see higher quality. And then moving over into the warehouse market, we have Odom building 250,000 feet, their brand new distribution center. We're going to see some pressure on some of the larger warehouses. But it hasn't been too bad. In fact, it's been pretty good. So overall, I'm estimating somewhere around 15% decline in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Good.
Just to follow up, and I appreciate your expertise and insight. Today's paper, I think the headline was wage loss for the first time in 20 years, and just your thoughts towards declining employment and its implications for the...
As long as I got a soapbox, you know,
there you
go. Ivory soapbox. Two major problems with the state, our state, and it's just very simple for someone like me who's a simple entrepreneur. Number one is that we're in a situation where we have way too much extreme environmentalism. I lived in Oregon. I spent my first 30 years there. And we're not a small state. In Lower 48, I talk to people all the time and think we're polluted. My goodness, we're not even close to polluted. The extreme environmentalism is a real detriment. Now, I don't want to be quoted as saying environmentalism, but I was part of the bottle bill in 1971 in Oregon when I was at the University of Oregon. I believe it, but extreme, when you're sitting there, the only thing you need is an air permit to drill. And I can drill off of Catalina Island or next door to Baton Rouge without an air permit. What does it tell you? We are the ugly stepchild. And the environmentalists take full advantage of it. You have to moderate them. You don't have to get rid of them. You have to moderate them. And then the other side of the coin is, can you imagine, Dana, if I leased my properties with you coming in and saying, I'm going to do a Wendy's restaurant here, I'll pay for the equipment and put it in. You know, I don't think I'm going to make any money here. So I'm not going to open it, so I don't owe you any rent. That's absurd. These lease contracts for our resources should be regular income, just like anything else that you lease out.
You're referring to the oil.
I'm referring to the oil and any other natural resource. You go in there, you pay the amount, and then you pay a monthly fee. That's really where our basis of income should come, not a state income tax. Everyone should pay if they go in and lease the space from someone else. What do you do with them right now where you've been? You compete them. Our contract calls for you to take it to market if it's economical. Well, all you got to do is leave and say it's not economical. Well, what the hell then? Put it out to bid. I'll step in and take that lease because I think it's economical. Now you got a situation with the owner of the lease just telling Hill, we run some numbers in our estimates, tell us it's not economical, so we don't even die. Put them back out and say, does anybody want to compete on this lease and think it is economical? But that's really where we've got to get a base to do, because we're a natural resource state. And if we could get those two rocks in a row addressed, we could create jobs again. But right now, you know, we have been in a very difficult position, and I'm very hopeful we can come back as the world expands and these commodity prices come back.
Mr. Chairman, can I just for the moment?
Could you give all that?
Okay, I just want to make sure. Thank you. Don't need to say it again, but it'll show up somewhere. Thank you.
Andrew Northrup.
That's kind of a tough act to follow. From a lender's perspective, Mr. Chair, it's programs like this and dealing with Bruce has been a great customer of Northrup Bank. You know, as banker, you know, do I want to lose a good solid $3 million loan? No, not really. But it's programs like yours that allow customers like Bruce to lock in at this rate and a rising rate environment, as he mentioned, with the retail and the office market softening a bit. We're able to kind of solidify that interest rate risk on Bruce's behalf and the cash flow and facility. So I would just like to say yes, that some of the market issues that we're seeing out there, you know, kind of aligned with what Bruce has done. But from the lender's perspective, it's programs like yours and the refinance that kind of bring a comfort level to the bank and customers like Bruce to, you know, for the future of him being able to stabilize his cash flow and as a result help out. You know, I think there's an indirect benefit then to as Mr. Chambers have mentioned, the long-term tenants and controlling those rents.
Great. Well, thanks everybody. Appreciate the update. And then so in a couple of years, Bruce, your tenants out there will be happy because you stabilized the interest rates and the rates that they have, rates haven't gone up. And
I wouldn't heard a half of them. Find them all 3 and 5 year renewals or lowered or kept in flat. You can see the handwriting on all the foil stuff.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
If there's no further discussion on this resolution, I will take a motion for a move.
Second.
All right, so before us, we have, for the record, we have loan L17-02, the 72 investment. Crane, would you pull the board?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yep.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yeah.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. That brings us to the agenda item number B, loan resolution L17-03, Share Bank Hospitality LLC.
And 7A, loan resolution number L17-03 regards the purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to Fairbank Hospitality LLC. The loan refinances the 114 Room Holiday and Express Hotel located in Fairbank, Alaska. The dollar amount of participation is $6,075,000, and we'll hand it over to Chris.
Thank you. This is an item large loan participation. It is $675,000, and North End $675,000,
borrower
Fairbank Hospitality LLC.
Chris, could you speak up just a little bit?
Yes.
Thank you.
I can. guarantors are Bill Lawson, Christopher Ashenbrenner, Adrian Larson, Andrew Larson, and Christine Ashenbrenner. They will be refinancing the Holiday Inn Express located in Fairbanks. It's a 114-room hotel. And the borrower will benefit by a lower interest rate to 3.95, down from current interest rate of 6.25. And we're also extending out the term for 25 years. There are 26 existing jobs that are supported. Property will be managed by a hotel group, which manages all of Mr. Lawson's hotels. We'll take a first deed of trust.
on improvements. Greg Wang again did appraise this facility at $9 million on an as-is value, and we would be doing a 75% loan value. The debt service coverage proposed on this property is 1.55 to 1. We would also require UCC filing on their FF&E furniture fixtures and equipment. Currently, the borrower has no outstanding loans with EDA. However, they have had four previous loans dating back to 1995. So we, again, have history with this borrower, borrowing entity, and we have always paid as agreed. There are no known environmental issues. The strength that we saw in this credit was the fact that it was professionally managed. You have a seasoned borrower. It is a flag hotel. It has a good operating history and guaranteed financial strength. We didn't see any weaknesses beyond what your typical market risk would be. And with portfolio diversification, again, March end month 2017 numbers, ADA had 14.22% of their statewide portfolio in the tourism industry. That would increase to 15.51. And currently, in the interior region, we don't have any new portfolio attributed to tourism. We did have one, but it paid off here. And the loan would increase the penetration then to 44.64% of the interior. So with that, I would recommend this loan as well. We do have Mr. Lawson here today. Mr. Lawson resides in Danby. So, and Sue Wolf with Nordstrom. So I'm again looking it up for any questions.
Barry? Mr. Chair, I would move Bill 17-13 for approval, please.
Thank you. Fred? Mr. Chairman, I just wondered, what's the variable rate Northrend is charging for the 10-year term compared to the rate we're charging for the 25-year term?
I believe that...
The initial rate.
Northrend, correct me if I'm wrong, is 4.75. That's the initial rate, and we are on a 3-year variable.
Pensis on the industry.
Pardon me?
Pensis on the industry. The variation is tied to something.
Yes, tied to an industry.
Right. We tie it to the Federal Home Loan Bank 3-year amortizing rate plus a margin of 280 basis points.
And I did want to note the 26 jobs that are supported. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Probably a question, Mr. Lawson. So, with Holiday Inn, it's just more of interest than anything. I mean, Express came and put a hotel on Fort Wainwright. Is that something that is typical of an Army base across America, or how did that come to pass at Fort Wainwright?
My wife's maiden name was Chambers, but I don't speak like the Chambers. But anyway, I didn't like it. And they're doing it across the country. Yeah, it's a deal that IEG has with the military. And it's happening in different locations. And it just happened to be one of them.
Do they do it all with the same owners? Or do they pick orders across America?
No, they vary. Correct. Yeah. I mean, that Holiday Inn Express is inside the gate up there. I mean, and what's interesting is that you pick up the phone and they'll ring us first. It gets to us first, number one. But if we're full, it does roll to them. And you just make the reservation, you go to the gate, tell them whatever, and you go check in. And it's back inside quite a ways if you've been back to that mall. I mean, it's just back, a couple miles back inside the gate. So.
And you don't have to be military to take advantage
of it? No, sir.
So, that's really interesting. How long has that been going on?
That was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
It was built in Fairbanks.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Not right. Not really. Not very interesting.
Interesting is an interesting word.
Yeah.
Maybe we should get Bruce back to comment.
What
did
he think? Anyway, thank you. That's interesting.
Chris, I have a couple quick questions. One is, when you have a multiple ownership
for the debt, how does that work? Is it each individually for all maximum?
Yes, 100% guaranteed all parties.
100%. Okay. And is it the collateral just the existing asset, or is it all assets of the individual borrower?
Just the collateral, so it's project based.
Okay.
But you have a full guarantee of all other guarantees.
Of the project. Okay. So it's not cross collateralized by any of those.
No, and it's not a limited guarantee. It's 100% guarantee of all guarantees. Is that empty?
They're 100% responsible for that one project, but you can't. There's no other assets that are put in for.
No, not specifically. But I mean,
the individual guarantee that they would have to go for.
Right.
I just put multiple, borrowers. I didn't know if there's a percentage ownership that went to the waterfall down to that percentage of the net node.
We try not to.
Any further questions? All right, I'll call for the question for him. Bill Foldmore, please.
Mr. Wilson.
Aye.
Mr. Perry.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Mr. Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Next item is a presentation by Cowan Associates, Overview Aid Investments.
Yes, so for item 7C, we have Gordon Waitman with Cowan Associates, and I'm asking to pay this to present. I've also asked Brent Applegate to join.
Good afternoon, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. Appreciate the invitation. Thanks for welcoming me in today. Cowan and Ada have a 17-year relationship. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I'm very appreciative of it, as are my colleagues. I just wanted to say thank you for that.
I'm just going to try to do a lead-in for Gordy and what he's going to be speaking about today. Historically, unrealized gains and losses in our investment portfolio have had the largest impact on our net income year over year. And in a rising interest rate environment like we're in right now, I felt like it was very important that the board understand the market impact on our investment portfolio as we get into our year end. And unrealized gains and losses are paper losses only, so it impacts our bottom line, but they're only realized when you actually sell that investment. And I think, as you also know, the reason why we are required to mark our investment portfolio to market is driven by GAAP B31, which all governments have to abide by. And I thought also it would be helpful for you to understand when we're talking on our financial statements, what we are looking at. And then also, just wanted to hand out, Cowan did a review of our external investment managers last year, and so I'm going to be handing out a document. Yeah, thank you. So I think I gave you the last thing that you could come back to me. I gave you the review. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And then also I'm going to pass around our financial statements. And we can talk about how these numbers will be impacted, or what numbers are being impacted.
Could you get a smaller font?
I know, I'm sorry. So he ends up magnifying glasses
for this. Yeah, I'm doing this.
So the financial statements, I put an X by the line items on the balance sheet and on the income statement of where the direct impact is going to be of unrealized gains and losses in our portfolio. On the balance sheet, you've got unrestricted investment securities, non-current investment securities, And then down at the bottom, under net position, that unrestricted net position, and the impact of. And if you go on to the back of the income statement, there's a line item for net increase, decrease, and quality of investments, which are where these unrealized gains and losses are going to flow through. So I just wanted you to understand where these numbers are going to show up at year end. And then, as we all know, ADA has a three-legged stool. One of those legs is our investment portfolio as a corporation. And at 3/31/17, ADA's cash investments totaled approximately $447 million, excluding Medicam. So we do have a substantial investment portfolio. This is a very important topic. And with that, unless there's questions,
Mr. Chairman, just doesn't the next belong by net position end of year on the second
quarter? Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah. Correct. Any other questions before I turn it over to Gordon?
So I've been asked to be brief and stay on point. I know your time is valuable, and I want to make it useful for you. The one thing that I'm not aware of is your level of understanding of the fixed income market. So as I go through and talk about some various things and use terms, feel free to ask me what they mean, and I'll try to explain them as we go along.
Gordon, before you start, would you tell us how much money you're talking about total in your portfolio?
Yeah.
How many dollars that is, so everybody understands what that is?
Absolutely. So as of March 31st, 2017, it was $379.5 million.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. 3 points. I want to talk a little bit about the fixed income environment, what we're dealing with today, talk about the enterprise development account, and then also the performance of your external managers. In summary, when I look across your program, I think it's sound. I think it's built to meet your objectives. And I also have confidence in the managers that you employed to run the assets. So this slide has some high-level bond language, maturity, coupon rate, bond prices. The biggest risk to your fixed income portfolio is interest rate risk. And that's called duration. The way it can be explained in simplest terms is that if there's a 1% increase in interest rates, your bond portfolio is going to fall by the duration of the portfolio. Right now, your duration is around 5.8. So if rates go up 1% in a parallel fashion, your bond portfolio is going to fall 5.8%. Now, that's going to be offset by the yield that you can get on your portfolio, which is right around 2.5%. Right? But you can still lose money in this environment if rates start going up. And so duration is the biggest risk that you have. What your bond managers are looking to do is have some management around duration, sector rotation, which means do I buy treasuries versus corporates versus asset-backed securities or mortgage-backed securities, and then security selection.
Mortgage-backed, I saw that movie.
Yes, they weren't all rated AAA.
Over and over again.
So they were rated AAA.
Yeah.
And then issue selection is what securities do you actually find attractive in various sectors and actually implementing and buying them for your portfolios. Now, by guideline, you have a very high-quality portfolio. The minimum rating it can be is AA-, and that's high quality. You have constraints around duration. So your managers can go plus or minus 25% of the duration of the index, which is the Bloomberg Barclays aggregate. The old Lehman Ag, which was bought by Barclays, and now Bloomberg bought it. So it's Bloomberg Barclays aggregate. And no leverage. No leverage on the securities being purchased, and they're all investment grade. So no junk bonds, no high yield bonds. For 96 years, basically, when he started a bond portfolio in 1981, it's been a wonderful time. Rates have gone down, there's an inverse relationship between interest rates and bond price. So when rates go down, bond prices go up. If you were a bond manager over the last 30 years, you had a pretty good ride. The annualized return from this peak in interest rates through today, 8.2% on an annualized basis. Right? And we're not seeing those returns today because we're very much in a low-yielding environment. And so I just wanted to give you a little bit of perspective of, you know, ADA, we have a 17.5-year track record for ADA's bond portfolio at Callan. And the returns have been very strong over that period of time, primarily because we've ridden down this interest rate cycle. And now we're at the bottom. Everyone, for an extended period of time, has actually anticipated rates going up. Many have been early, and they haven't benefited from that. But we're in this low-returning environment. Today, if you buy a 10-year Treasury security, you get 2.22%. If you go out and buy a 30-year security, you get 2.9%. So you're barely keeping up with inflation when you're buying these fixed income securities. So what's the effect of rising rates? This is a very mathematical example of what rising rates can do to a fixed income portfolio. And the timing of rates and when they rise matters a lot. So this green line, which is the top line, is saying, okay, well, what if rates, we start at 2 and rates go up 1% a year for 3 years until we get them an interest rate of 5? Well, in your first year, you have rising rates. You're going to fall 2.6%. Now that's after you get the yield offset from the price decline. 3 years, you're still going to be negative, down 1.7. But over the long term, you're going to start reinvesting at higher yields, and over 10 years, you know, this shows that you get it to 3%. And it's actually the highest return of the other of the scenarios that I'm going to show you. This gradual rise, which is the red line, basically says if we go from 2 to 5 over 10 years, what does the portfolio look like? That's a tough situation because basically over that period of time, rates are continuing to go up incrementally. So the first year you're slightly positive, over 3 years again, 10 years 1.9. The best case scenario for a rising rate is just to have them go up 3% tomorrow. You have a loss in your bond portfolio, but over time you'll be reinvesting at those higher yields, which is beneficial.
Are we experiencing a gradual rise right now?
Absolutely. And what's happening is the Fed is starting to increase the short-term rates. Mm-hmm. Now we're between 1 and 1.25%. Problem is, that doesn't mean that all maturities on the yield curve are increasing. Right? It's actually flattening right now. The yield curve is flattening. In a normal environment, the yield curve is upward sloping, meaning that if you're going to lend somebody capital over a longer period of time, you get a higher interest rate on it. Right? Makes sense. What happens when it flattens, and it actually can become inverted, is that people and investors are saying, I don't know what's going on in the markets right now. I'm going to buy a 10-year treasury at a rate that's lower than what I can get from 1 year for safety. So I have that safety of capital over 10 years. That usually happens in a recession as we go inverted. And right now, the curve is flattening, somewhat artificially by the short end of the curve and the Fed increasing rates. But it's certainly playing into the environment and the returns that you can get in the marketplace. You look at declining rates in this scenario. Well, first year looks great, 6.6, but look over 10 years. It's the lowest returning of all these scenarios. Right at 1.5%. Just a moment on spreads. So spreads are basically over treasuries. So if you buy a credit security, what's the yield advantage to taking on that extra risk? Right now, spreads are minuscule. They're all-time tights, meaning that you're not really being compensated for taking a lot of extra risk and credit and other sort of spread sectors like mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, and high yield.
And so, sorry, one more time.
Yes.
Spread, definition of spread is?
It's So Treasury is the baseline. Mm-hmm. That's the spread is over. So if you look at a corporate security, for example, there's usually a yield advantage that you get over that Treasury. When the spread is really wide, means yields are up, bond prices are down, they're usually cheap. That often happens in a recession. When they're really tight, it means that bonds are very expensive. And so the yields that you're going to get from buying a corporate, are you really being compensated for the extra risk? You have to pay a lot to get that.
And the spread is a function of risk,
right? It's priced by the market, and it's driven by investor demand. Yep. And so the point here is that the risk. We have low yields, and if you want to take any risk, you have to pay a lot of money to do it because they're expensive. So slide 9 here looks at the enterprise development account and the history of returns. Now when you look over 10 years, which factors in the global financial crisis, gotten 3.83%, you have a target benchmark, and you've exceeded that, 3.56%. Your longer term experience has been strong, 4.6% on the assets. 3.42% for the benchmark, so you have met your objectives, right? You preserved capital. Mr. Chairman, a question.
I think I'm about to get educated because I don't think I'm looking at this mathematically right. But I just trended that's the total fund, the difference between what was achieved and what the target was.
Yep.
So over 17 and a half years, we're positive 1.18% above the target. Over 10 years, it's 0.27, 5 years, 0.16, 3 years, 0.01, and for last year, it's minus 0.29. So that the positive over 17 and a half years is riding the curve, riding the data from the first slide. But that trend says that we're not performing in recent history. So why isn't that a red flag that we should be doing something different?
Mr. Chairman, may I answer the question? When you look at how the returns have decreased, it's harder to get a big outsized excess return in today's environment. You have to take a lot of risk in order to do that. I did an analysis recently where I looked at what is the advantage to taking 2 more years of duration risk for another client's investment portfolio? 30 basis points. Okay? And when we did that, they said, well, there's no need to do that for 30 basis points. And so while you see, over the last 5 years, for example, there's not a lot of excess return there. Certainly not as large as what you've seen historically.
But we've been riding that.
That's part of it. So what the target basically says, if you had no active management, you just invested passively, that's what you would get, 3.42%. But you have active managers, and so they have added...
They're not earning their keep, because in the last year, internal managers, you'd only be down 0.03, and instead you're down 0.06, right?
There will be times when your external managers have a return that's lower than the benchmark.
But given that, can you go back to the first slide? Given that we're at the bottom of that 30-year run, why wouldn't we just tuck in and roll and go internal?
You certainly could. However, you would be giving up the potential for yield going forward.
Sure. Because you're being risk averse.
Yes.
Sure. That's capital.
That's right. But I wanted to show you rolling 1 year results. And this is of your total fund of the enterprise development account. Let's just
show you money to
this, by the way. 331 total capital investments is $437 million. Some of that is restricted.
So each data point on here is a one-year rolling return, and we're looking back over 16 and a half years here. And the point of this is to show you, if you look at the blue line, that's zero, there are times when you can go negative. It's usually when rates increase. When it happened in, at the end of 2013, that was the taper tantrum when the Fed said they were going to pull back on quantitative easing. And people panicked. And so, you know, most of the observations here are certainly above zero, and some of them have been very, very strong, but there are periods, given the interest rate risk that you take in your portfolio, where you can go negative.
From me going negative in 17, looks like it's close. Man.
So, yeah, let me skip ahead to that. Next page, 11. These are fiscal year results. Your portfolio, the green line, red line is the benchmark. And these are just your external managers. So this excludes the internal assets. And so far this year, we've seen interest rates go up, and so you're down 1.7%. Now, that's through March 31.
So that's second quarter? Third quarter? What is that?
Third quarter.
So to put a dollar amount on that, when we closed our third quarter, unrealized losses were about $15 million. And that's compared to a $12 million unrealized gain at June 30, 2015. So that's a $25 million gain.
The good news,
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
This is probably for Brenda, excuse me, but how much money is with our external managers?
About $380 million.
The good news is that since the end of the March quarter through yesterday, the Barclays aggregate is up 1.8%. And so there's a chance that you will get pretty close to breaking even and not have
a the unrealized loss in what you realize.
Yes.
What do you mean?
And it won't stick because what happens with the loan market at the end of the year, that is a permanent basis adjustment for carrying the value of our assets going forward. So we really want our June 30 number to be as
well. You can also get a sense of the value added from your active managers. We'll take a look in year ending June 30th, 2013. The index is actually down and your portfolio was up. And so you made money in a negative environment. Perhaps lastly, outside of questions, we can talk briefly about Alaska Permanent Capital Management. We have two external bond managers. ACCM is the more conservative of the two. You've had a long relationship with them. They use duration a little bit as a tool within their toolkit to manage the portfolio. Really what they're trying to do, though, is beat the benchmark by 25 basis points after fees. So these guys are not swinging for the fence. You know, they're single hitters, trying to move the runners along. And it's consistent with your investment policy statement. Right? And they do it for a fairly low fee of 13 basis points. And when you look over time, they've done exactly what they said they would by outperforming the benchmark. Now, their conservative nature results in a fairly poor peer group ranking. So that's by design. That's what you hired them for. And so what I mean by that is if you look over the last 15 years, the green dot is a peer group ranking for Alaska Permanent Capital Management is 73rd percentile, meaning that the vast majority of active managers outperform them. Barrow Hanley, they're in Dallas, Texas, very well-resourced and experienced investment-grade bond manager. Callan has several common clients with them. And you hired them a little under 4 years ago. They replaced a firm called Dodge & Cox at the time. And they have a value orientation. They're duration neutral, so they don't use duration as a tool. They say whatever the benchmark duration is, that's, we're going to match it. And then they try to outperform by picking securities. So their relative value, what's the cheapest security we can buy that gives us the best yield? Very strong risk focus when they build their portfolio. And they've added 14 basis points. Now, over time, the expectation for them is higher than that. closer to 50 to 75 basis points over the benchmark. But part of their lower return since you hired them is because they haven't been able to find attractive opportunities in the credit market. They like to play in the credit market. Credit spreads are tight, making them expensive and rich, and so they've actually pulled back from credit because of that and become a little bit more conservative.
Before we move on, could you tell me a little bit about Alaska Permanent Capital Management? Who are they? Where are they?
They're here.
Isn't that started by Dave Rose?
Yes, from the Alaska Permanent Fund. And a pretty small shop. Their clientele is all in Alaska. I don't believe they have any clients outside of Alaska. And they are known as being a conservative, straight down the middle fixed income manager. I believe Dave still has the majority ownership in the firm, the privately held firm. His family. And compared to someone like Barrow Hanley, their assets under management are much smaller. So they tend to be a little bit of a boutique here in Anchorage and service primarily Alaska clients. We, Callan did an evaluation of them twice, actually in at the end of 2015 and 4 years ago when we did a search for core bond managers when Barrow Hanley was actually hired. And at that time, Alaska Permanent Capital Management was rehired, and we think highly of them for what their intention is.
Well, out of curiosity, we're seeing the end result of return on investments or investment strategy, or what is the cut that everybody's taking before it gets to us? I.e., if that's a 2.9 or 2.8, I mean, how many basis points above that can we, for fees?
23 for Barrow Hanley.
Yeah.
23 basis points, 13 for Alaska Permanent Capital Management. When you look at that against the peer set, those are all below median from what you would expect.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned
our data's current investment policy statement. So when was the last time was that revisited?
We need to change to last time we changed it was 2013. October 2013 was the last time we made a change. That's when we added analysts to the allowable investors.
Okay. Almost 5 years ago.
Right.
So really in your expertise of managing managers, or however you describe your business as, is it your opinion that our investment policy statement is accurate and in zone for typical organizations like ourselves? We need to revisit it. Do you think there's room for a little more aggressiveness, or are we exposed to be a little more conservative? And it's a loaded question.
Right. I think your investment policy is sound. I read it again on the way up here on the plane, helped put it together back in 2013. And really, it's a question of risk and time horizon if you look to change it. If you have a very short time horizon and you say, we can't experience a loss of capital, realized or unrealized, well, then you need to change your investment policy to become more conservative. If you have a longer time horizon, of 5 to 10 years even, and you can stomach some short-term volatility, then you are perfectly set up.
Well, if the asset base grows, I mean, obviously, the risk tolerance grows. I mean, if your asset base is small, then your, you know, the exponential effect to your balance sheet becomes more prominent.
Sure.
So that, you know, obviously, the aged asset base has grown through both fixed and liquid assets. At what point or what portfolio strength or cash position would you suggest the aid of using the statement?
That's a fair question. Mr. Chairman, honestly, I would have to do more work to answer that. And, you know, if you have, like, the cash reserves to operate your organization efficiently and you feel comfortable with it, then maybe there's a portion of assets in which you can take more risk.
The question becomes, do we take risk within our, in the boundaries of stable assets through private, you know, private-public investment, or do we take it with investment with the market and bonds and treasuries, you know, so.
Are we constrained, or is that by law?
Again,
do we have to be in fixed income? Is that what puts all of our money in fixed income market? Is it policy? Is it statute? Regulation?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know that statutorily was
the rule.
Yeah, that would be that.
I'm sorry, Jerry.
Prudent investor rules that you have to follow.
As determined by the board.
As determined.
And that of commitments to loans and investments and other, you know, elaborate assets, correct? Okay, so it's the net cash.
Okay. I mean, we have a fiduciary responsibility to manage the assets in a prudent manner.
Just a couple of questions. Thank you for giving us guidance and your expertise. So I'm looking at the memo that was handed out, and I'm going to the CFO, where some of the numbers pop out in your explanation as to the basis points of Alaska Capital, which is 13, and then on page 2, it's 23 basis points for the fee. Shouldn't this memo really be dated this year? Is this really a year old?
This was, yeah, we just thought it was on board kind of to what Gordon was talking about. Exactly. So we just wanted to remind you that we talked about this before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. And one other question, Mr. Chairman. So I think, Brenda, you did a really good job giving us a preview for when we have the audited financial statements to the committee in November, and so highlighting these numbers on the realized or the unrealized gains and losses, which was $9.9 million a year ago. So tomorrow you're going to have mark-to-market, right, the end of the fiscal year. So are you giving us a preview of a range of what that number is going to be, because you must have a feel for it now?
You know, I know at 3/31, and the number on the financial statements, that number is actually realized and unrealized together. If you broke that number apart last year, it's about a $12 million unrealized gain. Then there were some realized losses last year. At 3/31, when we marked to market, the unrealized losses were about $13 million. Now, as Gordy said, we're anticipating that things have improved over this last quarter, hopefully. And unless something really bad happens tomorrow, when we mark to market, you know, hopefully that number gets a little bit better. Your guess is as good as mine on what it's going to be, but I'm hoping it's not as big as $13 million. I'm hoping it's a little bit smaller.
Thanks for the preview.
Yeah.
Jen, go ahead first.
Mr. Chairman, I think I know where this leads us, but I'm circling back to your question of it's 2013 since we considered our investment policy. In this memo from a year ago, the second to last paragraph on the first page says it with AIDA's investment policy being so risk averse, and the closing paragraph on the second page says under 8 is current investment policy and expectations. I see no need to change 8 as external investment managers recommend extending. Again, that's under our current investment policy and expectations. So I don't believe we have an appetite for greater risk, but it would appear that our existing policy framework is significantly risk averse, and I'm circling back to your question of whether that bears reconsideration. Probably get to John for thoughts on whether that's a worthy exercise or should we just. There's a lot of value in being conservative in terms of time.
Yeah, but I think within the boundaries of the prudent investor rule, there's room for diversification to have a broader portfolio of assets rather than strictly these. Highly risk-averse bond assets. So I think it's definitely worth considering revisiting, and then we'll come back with recommendations.
So we'll need that team to choose the time and place for that reconsideration.
Regardless, I think 5 years is a long time to go back and review that policy. It should be made, in my mind, 2 to 4 years. You're always looking at it because it's such a big percentage of our portfolio balance
for net assets.
Yeah, it's real material.
Yeah,
material.
Yeah, and just from a management standpoint, whether there's a change or not, I think it would be a great discussion amongst the executive staff and with the board. All right. Gary?
A couple things. Thinking back, I think this is the first time, Brandon, John, and Gordy, that the Chairman has came and submitted with us. We've gotten the quarter report. Chair, you're shaking that, am I being correct?
Yes, they've been here for a long time ago.
And so I just want to say, Gordy, thank you for coming and being with the staff. Thanks for having you. And it's something we should do every year. So I appreciate that. And then I'm kind of on a sidebar. In a prior life, I spent some time in Juneau. There was a fellow, his name is O'Leary. Is he still with Cal?
Sure.
Paul O'Leary?
Michael O'Leary. He's retired for 3 years now. He hired me in the Denver office. He founded the Denver office of Callan, and he worked with a number of institutions here in Alaska. Of which Callan still has a relationship with the Alaska Permanent Fund, RMV, which is the state retirement system, the Municipality of Anchorage, ADA, and the Alaska Pipeline Service Company.
Now he came to the Senate side of the House and gave a report every year. And his persona was such that he was a ruddy face. Irishman with an Irish brogue, so to speak, obviously very, very, very bright and very engaging, and he was there every year for us, and so he became sort of an institution, and I know Gina remembers him, and so if you see him again, just wish him well from Alaska, because he was quite a fella. I do remember one time after the markets had gone to hell in 2007, people were deciding whether to have the Callan and Associates come and report on the performance of the permanent fund. Everybody sort of looked at their shoes and maybe not this year. That was the only year out of my time where the Callan didn't come to report, because we really didn't want to have be drugged through that in a formal setting where everybody else is being drugged through across the world. So.
And Michael actually did the last presentation to the ADA board. He came up here to
do it. Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I was good. Well, good. Well, thank you for your indulgence. I just want to make sure that you pass on my good wishes.
I certainly will.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think if you get, when next time you come up, we don't want any gray hair yet.
I have two daughters, and I've noticed gray hairs are starting to
come out. You're one of the daughters?
Yeah.
The daughters will do that to you, trust me.
Or you didn't arrive.
Further questions on the Callan report?
Thank you, Gordon.
All right, we're shifting the dividend policy discussion, and we're going to go now to the interior energy project update.
And for the interior energy project update, I'd ask Gene Terrio to come to the table, and any team members he'd ask to join as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to provide a quick overview on the components of the IEP project, I will be submitting, finalizing a report, formal report to the legislature that is required under House Bill 5 next week, and have that delivered to them to make that obligation and follow this same form. On the gas supply issue, at the last A board meeting, direction was given to Canberra to look for that supply of gas, to sort of step back into the driver's seat to look for the same supply of gas that would satisfy a 105 plan requirement, and then they engaged with producers in the cooking area to secure that. At the same time, the IEP is looking at a longer term supply of gas. As we move to consolidate the two utilities, we are working with them so that whether the supply of gas we secure, they as a potential long-term owner of the asset will be able to have some input into the ultimate supply of gas that serves the combined enterprise long-term. And I think when we're in executive session, if you have any direct questions for Dan with regards to the status of the negotiation, you know, he would be prepared to discuss the one. On the LNG plant, we previously had purchased the preview documents for the potential expansion of the LNG plant. That will, of course, be contingent on a House of 105 plan ultimately being approved by yourself. And I know that Dan has reviewed the information that he secured from Salix, the feed, the final engineering, detailed engineering on the plant expansion will cover the incorporation of the existing plant, additional capacity from the existing plant, and then, of course, expansion with what we usually refer to as Titan 2 expansion. On the transportation, not much has changed there. We, of course, the previous one larger trailer. I don't in Germany, every time to me, there's bigger things out of a volume larger than if you normally see on the road, and we see them up and down the park highway regularly. And I know that Dan continues to work with the Alaska Railroad to respond to any questions they have as they continue to look at the potential for moving LNG or rail under the approval that they receive from the federal government. On storage, one of the items that is on the agenda today is a request for access to Kathleen Miller to do the feed work for the expansion, the construction of the large storage in South Fredon. So we will get back to details on that request. But as we have discussed previously, starting that project is time step tested. It will require the installation of pilings for the foundation, to support the foundation, to carry the incredible weight of that storage facility. And we want to make sure that we don't miss this coming winter season when some of those pilings will be installed.
Mr. Dean, you don't need a 105 plan in order to discuss this?
The 105 plan is very tied to access to the step funding of the winter. And so we have a little bit more flexibility with regards to the capital dollars. I think, you know, certainly board prudence, you don't want to get out too far ahead until you see the plant capacity to actually fill the storage bottles. But certainly with the limited request for funding for the feed document, I believe that the board has the latitude to consider that out of the capital appropriation that was granted for the project. One other thing just to mention is the storage credit that was achieved previously in statute with ongoing consideration of modifications to the oil and gas tax credit. in the legislature, and that piece of legislation is proposed to be back on the docket with one of the special sessions or session extensions. In the different iterations of the legislation during the regular session, there was a proposal to move payment of that credit or repayment out of the oil and gas credit fund and into requiring a direct appropriation from the legislature sometime in the future. Those two concepts, the continued access that would eventually be paid out of the oil and gas tax credit fund, where everybody else is lining up to get money out of, you know, the millions of dollars put into that pot. There's certainly some uncertainty to eventual payment for the repayment out of that fund, but there would be uncertainty with requiring the legislature to make a direct capital appropriation to repay the credit, the storage credit that we hope is available in the future. We're not absolutely counting on that. In order to make this enterprise moving forward, but it certainly would be to the benefit of the consumers in the interior if it ultimately is available. Utility consolidation negotiations continue, and I know month after month we tell you they're continuing. Tapering the deal under the MOU, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the time and you gave to the effort this week to understand the remaining issues, where there's some difference of opinion between ourselves and IGU to get the financial agreement and the purchase and sale agreement finalized to sell the Pentex assets to IGU, United Utilities. But we do believe, although it's slower than anticipated and hoped, we do continue to make progress on that front.
For the board's information, having the Fairbanks on Tuesday and Mr. Wilson and some of my IG folks on some of the issues that were, I guess, issues that were needed to be satisfied. Get a better understanding.
And then finally, Mr. Chairman, on the distribution, there has not been any expansion, appreciable expansion of the distribution other than Mr. Britton continues to work with the city crews and DOT and Fairbanks to look for opportunities when we will be doing time to expand his distribution system. Limited length of pipe, it just makes some financial sense to do that when a road project is being done. Also,
are you in Noble Street yet?
Yeah, we're about halfway done with Noble Street. So we're coordinating with their contractor, so as they open up the road, they prepare it for us to do and lay the pipe. And they do all the excavation and backfill as part of their contract with the city. But we make sure that we take advantage of when the roads that are opened up, we want to get our pipes in the ground. So yes, we are.
Okay. I think on the distribution under conversion assistance, the PACE legislation was finally passed this year. It's not a panacea for conversion, but it is a potential tool for the local governments to use. The legislation has not been sent to the governor yet for signature, but I think that's just been a part of the ongoing special session. Representative Wolves from Fairbanks was the prime sponsor of that bill. It's under the administration is probably working with him to have some kind of a bill signing up in Fairbanks sometime when both he and the governor will be there. I did give a copy of an article to Mr. Wilkins, actually Mr. Curry had sent me announcing that the four large boroughs along the railroad, or the four largest boroughs in the state are working together now with IGU, AEA as a coordinating entity to start to explore how they can share costs with implementing PACE for their mutual benefit in the future. So although we hope that it really helps with conversion to natural gas, it really is an energy efficiency conversion tool so other communities that even have natural gas access already can use looking to use it for other energy efficiency steps. We continue to look for potential outside sources of money. There are potential federal sources that can flow through that mechanism, And of course, it was anticipated that it would probably take the municipality about a year to figure out how to implement TASA at what level. That's been the track record in the lower 48. And for that, we have the attorney to finish his money.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Next up is the executive session to discuss insurance and lock one.
Chairman, the board entered the executive session to discuss confidential and financial information related to the interior energy project operations
center. Second. Thank you. Brandon, where are we doing it at?
You guys are going to be in the after room.
After room. And does Jerry have our number?
I believe Jerry gave it to him.
I have a number, yeah.
Okay, we'll be having that line open in a few minutes.
Okay, thanks.
While the board is in executive session, these phones will be muted. Thank you.
Okay.
Carson.
Hey,
you guys are on the west.
I don't know where. Which one am I looking at?
You are back on the record.
Thank you. So next up on our agenda, I will say that nothing was on the sheet. The quorum is established, and I advise the board not to take any formal actions on the matter discussed while in executive session. We are out of executive session, and now we're going to resolution C-17-08, Mustang Operations Center. Lot 1. Go ahead, Mark.
Mr. Chairman of the Board, you have a memo with background and recommendations and what is recommended is a approval or authorization for the executive director to enter into an additional $2.5 million investment in Bachmann LLC, and then also to work with the relevant the other relevant state agencies and industry to further the Mustang project. And seek long-term financing for the project. And the memo also constitutes the revised updated finance plan under 4488-173 for the Mach 1 project.
Okay, John, I mean, just for that,
Mark,
anything further to add on resolutions?
Yeah, I just had some introductory comments, which were for the resolutions authorized, it would require 100% of the membership interest in Lock 1, that it provides an additional $2.5 million in Lock 1 for use of bridge financing and authorizes data to the federal Department of Natural Resources, Department of Environment Conservation, and other state and local government officials with respect to acquiring 100% of the membership interest in Lock 1.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm supportive of where we're going with this, and accordingly, I'll move the resolution G-17-08 for approval.
Is there a second?
No, I'll second. This is Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. Any further discussion? Of course, I'll move the vote. Quinn?
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Deputy Mr. Paradise? Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
This is Ms. Burnett.
Yes.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Vick.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next up is H, Resolution G-17-07, FY 2018 budget for Pentex Alaska Natural Gas and interim rates for Fairbanks Natural Gas. John?
And so Resolution G-17-07 authorizes FNG's FY 2018 budget and rates. That's actually the budget thing that Dan Bridges takes to be able to answer questions and present the necessary.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Then we have the proposed budget before us. In the memo from Dan. Any questions from Mr. Britton?
Would you like to go walk through the highlights real briefly, Mr. Chairman?
If you'd like.
So for fiscal year 2018, we continue to be in a challenged environment as it relates to fuel oil costs, which has a potential negative impact on volume sales from Fairbanks Natural Gas with consumers. What we've used in the 2018 fiscal year is historical heating degree days, same as budgeted for 2017. We saw a return to more historical levels of heating degree days in 2017 and hoping that the weather will continue to be that way. The end results of the budget show a roughly $2 million EBITDA. A net loss of $420,000 primarily contributed to depreciation of the Pentex value adjustment. Within this budget, we have a recommended increase, small increase to customer monthly charges for our firm rate classes. That would take the monthly customer charge, for example, for a residential customer from $9.20 a month currently to $12 a month. In addition to the fixed charge increase, we are recommending...
And what is the NSTAR pay?
NSTAR's monthly charge for a residential, they call it a D1 customer class, is $17 a month. So we're still well below what other utilities are doing for monthly charges. You're seeing that shift somewhat on monthly charges to fixed charges for utilities given the level of conservation that's going on. Whereas an average customer maybe used to burn 180 MCF a year, they're 150 or below or through higher efficiency units. So you're spreading your fixed charges over less volume, so you need to increase those somewhat. For Fairbanks Natural Gas, those rates have not been changed for over 10 years. So it's been a very extended period of time that those fixed charges have remained consistent. So I'd say we're overdue and probably should have made an adjustment to those fixed charges prior to now. But so it has a fairly minor impact to a residential customer. Those fixed charge increases about $33 a year. The 3% volumetric increase to firm customers on our average residential consumer would be about $82 a year additional to the bill. So the total impact of these rate changes for an average residential consumer is about $116 annually. I will point out that when Ada did purchase Pentex, there was an immediate reduction to residential rates of 13%. This is adding about 3%, a little more than 3, including the monthly charges back, but we're still maintaining a 10% rate decrease from what the rates were prior to Ada's ownership. So we're still maintaining savings to consumers as a result of Ada's ownership.
Mm-hmm. And how much has the product increased over the time that Ada's owned?
It's increased each fiscal year by 4%. So our cost of gas has increased significantly in that time frame. In addition to the cost of gas, we're also seeing fairly significant increases in electricity rates at the plant location, and that's a big cost driver for us. So in addition to all of the other things that generally go up over time, you know, you've got your labor increases, your cost of power, and the raw cost of gas. So the rate increase that we're requesting in this budget is, for the most part, simply offsetting to a certain degree the increased cost of our raw goods.
It's safe to say, Dan, that had we not reduced 3%, and we would have kept up with our price of gas at 4% annually, then the hand aid in our first year would be at 21% higher.
Yes.
And then we're back up 3%, so the net difference is 18% reduction.
In comparison to at the time of Beta purchase, the residential rate was $23.35. At that time, Fairbanks Natural Gas was going through a rate increase and was requesting an increase to those rates. And if my memory serves me correctly, it was north of $24. the new rates we're expecting were going to be about 24. So if you look at comparative time frame, if it was under still the previous ownership, there was a cost of gas flow through mechanism, so that would have been flowing through automatically. And so the resulting savings to the consumer as a result of ADA's ownership is larger than that 10% that we're benchmarking right now, you know, in reality. So if in your handout, page 2 is really just a snapshot, a high-level summary. We are planning about a little over $2 million in capital expenses for 2018 fiscal year. A little over a million of that is for the 3 new trailers that were on order for some time now, previously approved. They will receive them in fiscal year 2018. Actually, delivery sometime in towards the end of July, beginning of August, we'll have those 3 new units. That $1 million of expenses can be offset by a commercial loan, and then the remaining capital will be funded through the cash flow of the business. So high-level net income loss of $422,000, but it's EBITDA, a little over $2 million, and with a net additional cash to the business of $700,000 resulting from the 2018 fiscal year. Here's a summary on page 3 of the capital project. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any, but I'll save you some time. I know it's getting late. I won't walk you through each item. This budget does not compromise any maintenance activities in any way. We continue to operate the facilities and maintain them in good order with a high level of reliability, following manufacturer's suggested rebuild time frame, and we will continue to do that. There is detailed pages to follow in the handout, and unless there's a desire for me to walk you through the detail, I'll keep it brief.
Okay. Sure, I move G17-07.
Second.
Discussion? Further discussion?
One other thing, Mr. Chairman, if I could just note this, so you're aware that the rate increase we're proposing to be effective on August 1st, we would provide our customers approximately 30-day notice, and not quite 30 days, but notice as part of their bill stuffing that the rate increase is going to take effect prior to it. So you can give them a bit of notice before it takes effect.
All right. I'd also like to note that the NSTAR rate increase for cost central last was 8% this year. Okay, so questions been asked? Ready?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Deputy Mr. Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Item I, Resolution G17-09, authorized front-end engineering design work for LNG storage facility and permit.
Motion to approve.
Go ahead.
Chairman, I move G17-09.
Thank you. John?
G1709 authorizes FNG Consumi to proceed with food work for proposed Fairbanks LNG storage facility, and turn over to Dan for discussion.
Sure. As we've discussed many times before, the importance of the large storage project from Fairbanks to the IEP is critical. It serves a multitude of purposes, from security of supply to helping to create a greater level of utilization of the liquefaction facility. It allows us to smooth our peak somewhat. So this storage facility, regardless of any expansion that may occur at the Titan facility, will play a key role to allow firm customer sales to continue. Just the storage facility alone, without any changes to Titan, would allow for approximately 400,000 MCF additional firm sales each year. Will provide for an additional opportunity for revenue growth. The project has been worked on in the past, and a significant amount of work done. However, to get it moving again and start moving towards the potential construction for the spring of 2018, we need to move forward with an updated request for proposals to vendors and a detailed feed engineering study.
Dan, do we have the number?
Yes.
The resolution?
The number needs to be added in page 2, section 2 of the resolution. I believe it's from $1,500,000.
$1.5 million. Thank you.
Is that a friendly amendment?
Friendly amendment.
No objection. And where are the funds coming from?
The funds are coming from the FY 2014 capital budget appropriation made to the authority.
All right. What was the balance being on that?
And Brenda?
Probably at around
40-ish. Okay. I did not have a detailed budget on your request, Dan. Is there one around somewhere? When was that? It was today?
Yeah.
It was today.
Yeah. I apologize, Mr. Chairman, if we didn't get back to you.
Okay. Yeah, that's from the first one.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
One quick question on this. The resolution itself does not speak to the size of the storage facility and capacity, and so I'd like to put it on the record what the size and expected capacity is. Good.
Just a question, Dan.
So the storage capacity is 5,250,000 usable gallons of LNG storage.
Friendly amendment. To include.
Okay. I'm not going to include that. So Dan, looking at your budget here, Alaska Fire Marshal Plan Review, $175,000.
There's a significant amount of effort that goes into the plan review by the fire marshal for a project like this that they're not used to. So that's a combination of fees to the fire marshal as well as engineering time to coordinate with them.
Is this the state fire marshal?
It's the state fire marshal.
Do you have a borough or a city fire marshal?
No, this is the state fire marshal has primacy on gas facilities, oil and gas facilities.
And is your, this is a wetlands permit mitigation fee, or are you in wetlands with this?
We're in wetlands with this location in order to expand our wetlands permit, our wetlands footprint. We have previously worked up our wetlands permit with the Corps, however, have not paid the fees necessary to offset the you pay a conservation fee, essentially buying alternative lands that they place in conservation to offset any lands that we built.
So half of the cost is other things than real engineering and design.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah.
In addition, the pipeline hazardous material safety advocacy has taken a greater level of upfront involvement in LNG projects. They used to just be a inspection arm, but they're also now getting involved early on in your design. So it requires a higher level of detailed design than you would normally do in FEED. So just to make sure that you have alignment with those entities, and you don't have anything that comes out of the blue.
So this is an initial million and a half tranche of funding, and ultimately, what is the ultimate budget of the storage facility, LNG storage facility service?
So the last time we looked at it was $42 million, and so part of this will be to solidify that budget and ensure we have an up-to-date and accurate budget for final consideration.
And when do you anticipate more stuff? So your anticipated work on the foundation is going to start this fall or winter?
The schedule that we put forward had a spring piling installation. The that's predicated on a revision of the design we did where we're going to a driven pile versus a drill pile. It allows us to get the pile driven, but doesn't require the freeze back that would be otherwise required, so it allows us a little more flexibility in that schedule. But the schedule we're driving to would be to get our RFP out and be able to issue contracts sufficient that a contractor could be begin piling work in the spring, so that the pilings are in place and ready for the pile cap, concrete pile cap, as soon as possible in the spring they've started, so that we have as much time in the summer of fiscal year 18 to be able to begin the outer tank construction. The outer tank at that point acts almost as it's a housing, and so they can work on the inner tank during more inclement weather. And if you don't have that outer tank up in time, you really will get delayed because you can't work on the welding and the fish.
It was just pointed out to me that the budget that we received via email from John that your costs and your totals don't really add up together, John.
Cost line versus the total line. Then.
So is it the total? We still get.
Did I make an error in the total line?
I think for us it's really just the million and a half covered.
I'm going to look at the total line.
That's right. I made some revisions as I went along, and I moved them in the total side versus the cost. So I apologize, Mr. Chairman. You should refer to the total column.
Were you negotiating down as you were working through the spreadsheet?
Yes, I was.
That's really my thunder. That's really my thunder.
Yeah.
Put you down. All right. So.
1.5 is the number that we're working towards.
Any further questions before I call for the vote?
Hearing none, Craig?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Yes, Commissioner Paradis? Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Yes, Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Is there any further business?
Yes, Chair. We've got a resolution to propose regarding...
We have a brief at ease that's being typed up right now.
All right. Well, I'll give you 5 minutes.
I need to amend your agenda to provide some...
Well, I don't know what to amend it to because I haven't seen it. What the number is? Is it G10?
G17-10.
All right. I'll amend it when we get back.
You are back on the record.
With the board's indulgence, I'd like to add an agenda item under new business. It would be item J, and it would be resolution G17-10. And I'll read it to you. It's a resolution of Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority related to gas supply costs incurred by the Interior Gas Utility. And we have a motion to the table.
Mr. Chairman, I move G17-10 for approval.
Second. John?
Yes, Chair. So whereas the Interior Gas Utility has incurred approximately $150,000 in costs in seeking an affordable gas supply for the Interior Energy Project, whereas these expenditures in advance of Alaska and liquefied natural gas plant and distribution systems that serve interior Alaska as a primary market, and whereas payment of these expenditures from the FY 2014 capital budget appropriation made to the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority is appropriate and legally available, now therefore be resolved by the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority as follows. Section 1, the authority is authorized to reimburse the Interior Gas Utility up to $150,000 for costs incurred in pursuing a gas supply for the Interior Energy Project. Reimbursement shall be from the FY 2014 capital budget appropriation. Reimbursement shall require a presentation of expense and other documentation that the executive director determines to be appropriate. Dated in Anchorage, Alaska, the 29th day of June 2017.
Thank you. Discussion?
Chair, Christine, do you think it would be appropriate in Section 1 to put a deadline which those reimbursement requests would need to be submitted to you?
Certainly.
I would friendly amendment a date chosen by the executive director.
Objection to that? Friendly amendment approved. All right. Further discussion? Ready for the vote? Mr. Ray?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yes.
Then Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next up is item 8, director comments, John.
Dashboard low and links to the planning reports are available for review, as well as infrastructure development, project development, and asset management division project matrices. Items on the continuing education calendar, please reach out to Sherry Peterson. And then next regularly scheduled state board meeting will be on Thursday, August 10th, 2017.
Any questions to the director and more comments?
As I mentioned last meeting, your audit committee is scheduled to meet in November, but it's going to be based on Fred's availability. He's going to determine the date because he hasn't been able to participate on that audit committee, so that's forthcoming. And then, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to reiterate your committee's available if there's ever any issues in the audit or auditors. You can meet and discuss those.
All right.
Three members of the committee. The next thing I would like to comment on, I'm real pleased with the federal government, the current administration's efforts to reduce unreasonable regulations, and I think that will help our mission in decades to come. I'm hopeful of that. And lastly, I'd like to thank John and his staff, and very specifically Chris Anderson, that attended the Greater Wasilla Chamber of Commerce presentation. He had made a presentation on Tuesday. She was there, and I think it helped build goodwill and better friendship to members of that Chamber of Commerce.
Here,
I'm done.
Thank you, Dan. I would like to thank the board for their indulgence, a long day today, for their efforts. Also, I'd like to thank staff, town staff, Department of Law, and folks over there from Fairbanks, Jared, folks at Gene and Dan. And I'd also like to welcome our new human resource officer. And I look forward to working with you in the near term. That being said, I will look for a motion for adjournment.
Uh-huh. 10 seconds.
Are you adjourned?